This is a CNA podcast.
I want you both to sum up Malaysia's 15th general election with three words each. Mel, you first.
It's liberating, unsettling, and frustrating at the same time.
Wow. Afifa?
It was expected, but unexpected.
That's two words. You got one more.
Tiring. Can I say that?
You absolutely can. It certainly was for all of us involved. And we've got so much to talk about as to why it was so tiring.
Malaysia gets a new prime minister on the fifth day since the general election. Pakatan Harapan chief and the longest prime minister in waiting, Anwar Ibrahim, has been sworn in as the country's 10th prime minister.
That was my colleague Dawn Tan with the recent news of Malaysia's new prime minister.
Saya Anwar bin Ibrahim, setelah dilantik memegang jawatan seorang Perdana Menteri.
You heard there Anwar Ibrahim stating his name for official record on accepting the post of Perdana Menteri, or Prime Minister, at the National Palace in Kuala Lumpur in front of the King, Sultan Abdullah, Sultan Ahmad Shah. Mr. Anwar's rise to the top job was 3 decades in the making, and he had to wait a further 5 days after the nation's 15th general election resulted in a hung parliament. I'm Steve Lai, and on this episode of CNA Correspondent, you'll get a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to cover Malaysia's ever-changing political landscape, Anwar Ibrahim's long road to Putrajaya, and what to expect now that the country's longest opposition leader is now in power. And to help me do just that, I'm joined by CNA's Malaysia correspondents, Melissa Goh and Afifa Arifin. Good to have you both with me today.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Steve. Good to be back.
Yes, great to have you. I can hear almost the tiredness still in your voice left over from all the wonderful coverage you've been doing for us on CNA. Now, it's been a few days since Anwar was sworn in. You've even had a public holiday. Have you recovered from the nonstop coverage for GE15, Mel?
A little, I guess. But our work is not done. There's still plenty to do.
It does feel like it's never done when it comes to Malaysian politics. Afifa, how are you doing?
We thought we were going to have a long weekend, but Anwar Ibrahim is straight to work. On Sunday, he had a meeting with the National Council for the cost of living. So we had to go all the way to Putrajaya. But he did give us a public holiday. So that was good. That was one full day of rest for all of us.
Yeah, much needed and well-deserved as well. Mel, just give us a sense, how many elections have you covered and how is this one different?
I can't remember exactly. At least 5 or maybe 6, I think. But Steve, thanks for reminding me how ancient I am.
That wasn't my intention. It was just to give our listeners a sense of how much you've been on the ground covering all this stuff for us, which has been awesome. But how is this one different? Or how does it stack up to the ones? Or is it just all a blur?
Well, all elections are exciting in their own ways, I must say. But somehow, in all of them I covered, Anwar and Dr. Mahathir, they were always in the picture, dominating people's imaginations. So in GE14, remember in 2018, they fought together against UMNO led Barisan Nasional. They were on the same side, although Anwar was behind bars back then, and they won. But that didn't last. They had a fallout soon after, and Dr. Mahathir just refused to hand over the reins to Anwar, and the whole thing was a mess after that. Now, I'm glad GE15 gave some sort of finality to this constant tug of war between the two. I hope from now on, Dr. Mahathir can enjoy his retirement and Anwar finally gets a chance, the opportunity to chart the future for the country.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming for Anwar Ibrahim. Afifa, you covered GE14. Is that your first one?
Yeah. That was my first one when I was a young reporter.
Oh,
I mean,
it's aged you so much
young.
In the last 4 years, is that right?
No, I mean, it was just a completely different but also similar reactions because I remember in 2018, 9th May when the polling night, I was in Kedah and at 3, 4am, I remember turning to my other journal friends and I was like, what is going on? What is happening? This year, it's the same thing. And polling night, it's 3, 4am. I was still like, what is happening? So 5 years later, it's still the same reaction that I have on polling night. Just so much uncertainty and so many things that were so unexpected happening.
Yeah, there certainly were. Let me take you back to that night just several days ago. 7 hours into our coverage on election night, Afifa, around 3 a.m. as you're talking about it, Muhyiddin Yassin went live announcing that his Perikatan Nasional Coalition had the numbers to form the government. Talk us through how that played out at Pakatan headquarters where you were, since at that point, PH actually had won more seats. And about 25 minutes later, Anwar spoke.
Yeah, so when Perikatan Nasional's Muhyiddin Yassin announced that he had the majority, where we were in the hotel in Subang Jaya, the media was just outside of the hall. There were no sightings of any of the Pakatan Harapan leaders because they were all inside, the doors were closed and we weren't allowed in. So we didn't have any indication as to their reaction following the announcement by the PN side. But as you know, shortly after, they called a press conference. And we thought at that point, okay, maybe tonight GE15 went to Perikatan Nasional since Muhyiddin Yassin already came out and declared victory. But then when we went in for the press conference, Anwar Ibrahim came out and said he had the numbers. So all of us were so confused and we were trying to math the math. But at 3, 4 a.m. in the morning, you cannot. Your brain just can't function. We're trying to piece together, okay, who's going to work with who? Which coalition has how many seats? So it was all very confusing. And in the whole press conference in itself, I remember coming out after that to speak to you. We were live after that. And I remember saying that it was such an interesting press conference because this is a coalition that just announced that they had the biggest number of seats, that they had enough seats to form majority. But none of them looked quite happy with the announcement. You should be up there celebrating. But not everyone had a smile on their face. And in retrospect, you should have known that that was the start of things to come.
Yes, in the following few days of all the wrangling behind the scenes that would follow. Before we get to that, though, Mel, you were at Barisan Nasional headquarters, which was in stark contrast to previous elections gone by. They were almost wrapping up, heading home and heading to the exits by that time, 3 a.m.
Yes, I was watching the bloodbath over at UMNO headquarters. A lot of them are still in denial. The defeat was disastrous, but few expected PAS, Islamic Party. They had such a good run, bagging over 40 seats. From my conversations with the BN leaders, especially those in Pahang, they were already worried back then during the campaigning. They saw the green wave coming from the northeast because Terengganu and Kelantan, there are no state elections there. All the PAS machinery, the manpower, they were all mobilized to assist Perikatan Nasional across the country. They are highly disciplined and organized, and they provided just the right alternative for the Malay Muslims. They are not comfortable with Pakatan Harapan, not comfortable with Democratic Action Party. Now, as far as Barisan Nasional is concerned, UMNO, they are licking its wounds, but at the same time, they realize that the people have rejected them time and time again. They've done it again, and it's really soul searching. It's not enough. They really need to do something to overhaul and pick themselves up.
Just to wrap up this section of the discussion for both of you, what were the biggest takeaways for you both from an election night without a conclusive result and that saw the end of an era, both for former ruling coalition Barisan Nasional, plus what must also be, as you mentioned earlier, the end of former Prime Minister Dr. Mahathir Mohamad's political career?
I think Malaysians, they take their vote seriously, no matter how imperfect the system is, including the first-time voters, some 5 million of them, and those aged 18 and 20 as well, they did not disappoint. Despite the rain, the COVID-19 fear and so on, they came out to exercise their democratic rights. And that was refreshing for me. I like that very much. Although the mandate is quite split in the end between PN and PH, they clearly rejected BN. And it only won 30 of the 178 seats contested. Now, on top of that, they also lost Perlis and Pahang. But like I said, PH in the end helped BN to get back Pahang. So the point is, GE15 showed that every seat is now not safe. The people have done it before. They can make their votes count through the ballot box and they can do it again.
And Afifa?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Mel. I think this time round, the people really went out and made their choice, whatever their choice may be, whether it's in 2018, we saw that they made their choice against BN and everybody was swinging towards PH. But now, because of the three coalitions, they had a wider choice and they wanted who they want. And like Mel said, no seat is safe anymore. And it's really a maturing democracy where everyone can exercise their right to vote, and everyone did. We saw a high voter turnout. So I think that was something so inspiring to see Malaysians really come out and saying that this is what I want. This is the future I want for my country.
Yes, especially when there was fears that there was so much fatigue given all the political wrangling that had led up to this over the last 2 years. Do stay with us. Next on CNA, we'll rake through Prime Minister Anwar's priorities and challenges ahead, one of the first being a vote of confidence to take place in Parliament on the 19th of December.
Hi, I'm Adrian Tan.
And I'm Crispina Robert.
We are the host of a new podcast called Work It.
We're here to get into the essential things that no one tells you about working and company culture, from office politics to dealing with burnout.
If you've ever wanted to eavesdrop on an interesting conversation by the water cooler,
this podcast is for you.
Look out for our episodes wherever you get your podcast.
Big plans to revive Malaysia's economy, fight corruption and bring unity back to the country. That's all on Anwar Ibrahim's agenda as he begins his first day in the top job.
How's your first day at work?
Busy and heavy. A lot of problems, a lot of issues. But God willing, inshallah, we'll be able to overcome.
That's Dawn and Prime Minister Anwar again, and if you have sharp ears, you might have caught Mel Goh's voice there asking PM Anwar how his first day went. You're with me, Steve Lai, along with Mel and Afifa. Mel, Mr. Anwar has been busy since being sworn in. What are his immediate priorities?
Well, he seems serious about wanting to help the people to resolve the rising cost of living, to revive the economy. He said it's his first priority. He has gathered the relevant agencies to seek their views and task them to come up with an action plan in 2 weeks. Now, we saw that over the weekend. It's been running such a tight and busy schedule since the swearing-in ceremony. Meeting dignitaries on top of that, the Bruneian Sultan, he visited him as well to extend his congratulations. And he really needs to sort out the cabinet lineup soon and at least put together a core team. Balancing the different interests within his coalition government will be a true test for him to forge unity. He has said that don't expect position as a reward. Don't come to me for that. We'll see how he handles the relationship, especially with the Barisan Nasional chairman, Ahmad Zahid Hamidi. And that will be a tricky one.
Yeah, Afifa, I can see you nodding along there. To carry out his legislative agenda, he's going to need capable hands in key positions. Given he's helming a unity government, there's lots of focus on who's going to be making up his new cabinet. Talk us through what he said so far about his aims of how he's going to shape his cabinet.
Well, he wants a much smaller cabinet. He doesn't want a bloated cabinet, in his words, of the previous administrations, 50, 60, 70 people, including your ministers and deputy ministers. So he wants a very lean team. That's what we know. Of course, coming up with a cabinet is going to be very tricky for him just because there's so many parties involved in this unity government. And he has to give the cabinet positions to each party fairly and equally. But it's really not going to be easy, is what Mel has been saying, because how many cabinet positions do you give each party? Someone like Barisan Nasional, for example, is not going to keep quiet if you give them one or two positions, because to them, they are the kingmakers. They helped PH become the government. So they're going to make their demands. And then you have people who are your so-called court clusters, or people with ongoing court cases, including Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, as Mel said. But we also have some figures in Pakatan Harapan as well. Are those people going to be in Anwar's cabinet, or are they going to be sidelined? He has a lot of things to consider, but we've also been hearing that he possibly wants a more technocratic cabinet, one that involves people with credibility and merit, and it's outside of the political sphere. So could there be external appointments brought in and sworn in as senators? We don't know, but Anwar Ibrahim is in a very difficult position trying to manage all of this.
Yeah, and Mel, do we have any knowledge or any experience from Mr. Anwar on knowing how he's sort of done things in the past as to how he might be able to cobble together this unity government to appoint a cabinet that will be able to be reflective but also support him in his agenda?
Well, right now he's striking a conciliatory approach, trying to please all sides. He's not rushing to it. He's taking his time to weigh his options and all. It will be interesting to see who he puts to manage the finance and economic portfolios. That's number one. The education ministry as well, because these are important portfolios. Within his own Pakatan Harapan, his chief strategist, Rafizi Ramli, is touted as the front runner for the finance and economic portfolios. So it'll be interesting to see how he put them together and make sure that there is unity and cohesiveness within the government, a functioning, working one. But he knows the people is on his side. He has the golden opportunity. They should rally with him. And the king already said that wants a stable, a unity government, and hopefully that's enough to see him through.
And that is going to be put to the test as well. Once he's got his cabinet in place, this vote of confidence in parliament that's scheduled for the 19th of December. Afifa, why is he, I don't say he's put his neck out here, but he's laying it out there, like, you guys are going to have to back me now.
Yeah, he is. But that's a compromise that a lot of the parties are making, right? To be part of the government and to have positions in cabinet, you need to pledge your support to me as prime minister. He was very confident in saying that on the 19th when parliament sits, that he's going to first table a motion of confidence to prove that he has majority support. We saw over the last couple of days, even since he's been sworn in, that he's been meeting with every single head of every single party, hosting them over at his house, and really trying to get as much negotiation going on first before he decides on his cabinet positions. Hopefully, he will have their majority support on the day he decides to table a motion of confidence, which is crucial because what needs to come next is the budget. The budget has to be retabled as soon as possible. So he needs to get all of that done quickly.
Unlike Muhyiddin, the 8th prime minister, they suspended the parliament by declaring a state of emergency to avoid a no-confidence vote in a bid for stability, he said, in order to tackle the pandemic. Anwar is insisting on moving a confidence vote against himself when the parliament sits on December 19. And although he's not constitutionally bound to do that, and not sure whether there's a request from the king to do so as well, in any case, it's a democratic process to lend legitimacy to his government. Now, judging by the coalition partners right now, there are more than four of them now, his unity government, he said, have already attained the two-thirds majority on paper, and that will help him to focus on basically tackling the rising cost of living, to addressing people's welfare and so on, without being distracted by the numbers game. But in reality, he will always have to watch his back. I think that goes without saying. There's no such thing as free lunch. Everybody has to work for it, and he has to walk the talk and practice what he preaches the most.
Is it a way, because it's a unity government and it wasn't formed going into the election, into G15, it was more formed coming out of it, that the numbers have never been so clearly spelled out and stated? And it was at one point, both PN and PH said they both had the numbers. So this vote of confidence is in effect a way of putting that to bed. Everyone has to lay their cards on the table and declare where they stand on this, and then Malaysia can move forward.
Yes, and the test will be in the budget tabling, whether all sides can come together. You cannot trust simply because you have the two-thirds majority, even though MPs cannot switch sides now. The whole party can move from one coalition to another. So he cannot count on all of them at the same time. But what he can do during meantime, he's got a few weeks to go to basically solidify his majority, make sure that the Sabah and Sarawakian MPs, the coalitions there, are with him through this all. And not just his rivals, his problem, it's also the civil servants as well. There's 1.6 million strong of them. Now, in his first address at the Prime Minister Department, he is urging them to hop on board with him to make Malaysia great again. He's not interested to go on a witch hunt, he said. Enough of leakages, enough of squandering of people's money and corruption. Let's just focus on building a stronger Malaysia. People just want to see results. If he can stay on, if he can do that, they're willing to give him 5 years and even beyond if he can do that.
Yeah, the civil service, one that has seen so many changes of hands of government, must be keen to sort of get on and help the people of Malaysia. Let's broaden out the discussion then beyond budget tabling, beyond this parliament schedule for the 19th of December. Afifa, talk us through some of the big challenges that Mr. Anwar's new government will face.
Well, the economy is definitely one very, very big challenge. We're going into such uncertain economic conditions next year. There's a global economic slowdown expected. And Malaysia, as we know, is not doing well in that regard. And that has been Mr. Anwar's key priority, which is why he held this meeting on a Sunday morning with some high-level government officials to get that sorted, even before he has a cabinet. So that's one main challenge, how he can steer the country and revive the country's economy. And I think a lot of people are going to very closely watch what he does in order to resolve that, because that has been a key promise during his campaign. Other than that, I think managing the different parties in this unity government, it's going to be something that he always has to watch and he always has to maintain, because it's so unprecedented. We've never had this sort of unity government before. And like Mel said, he can table a motion of confidence on 19th December and have the majority support, have that two-thirds supports from the various parties. But in 2-3 months, who's stopping them from pulling support from him? Because your anti-hopping law doesn't cover parties jumping. And I can give you my support today, but that doesn't mean that that support will be given to you in 2-3 months. So unless there's some form of CSA that is done between, say, Pakatan Harapan and the other parties in the Unity government that assures that there is no political instability over an X amount of time, then maybe we'll see stability in that certain period. But other than that, that's one massive thing that he will have to deal with, because each party comes with a different ideology. So managing that and having to compromise is going to be very, very tough.
Sounds like we have to expect the unexpected, as we tend to do when it comes to Malaysian politics. It certainly is never dull. What should we be paying attention to then as the signs or the signals that Mr. Anwar and his Pakatan Harapan coalition are on the right track or are doing well or could be facing revolts from within? What should we be looking out for, Mel, going forward?
Me and Afifah, we're just wondering when the plotting is going to end, because already Perikatan Nasional Front, we are seeing leaders meeting with Barisan Nasional over the weekend. If not this hotel, that hotel, they've been spotted in there. Plotting is still ongoing as we speak. It's in our culture, it's almost, that it's bound to happen, if not now, later. And they will be spotted. These days, everything spreads on social media so quickly. There's no hiding. They are talking and they are also weighing their options. It's a tug of war, I would say, in Malaysia. This balancing two sides. But Anwar Ibrahim has waited for almost 3 decades, as you said. He's touted the longest prime minister in waiting. Now, his desire to remain in power is so strong. Hopefully, he will be able to perform as a glue. He did that before during Pakatan Rakyat's time. Back in 2013-14, he was the glue that is holding PKR and PAS, Islamic Party. PAS was also in the coalition. And he could perform that role. He is so nimble and is so diplomatic, is so good at his job that he could actually hold the two from DAP, Democratic Action Party, which is essentially a Malaysia for all Malaysians, and Islamic Party. He can balance the two very different interests and ideologies and make it work. So this round, his job is to do that, to tone down the Islamic rhetorics, the racial, religious sentiments, to keep it in check. At the same time, making sure that he runs the country well, help the people address the rising cost of living, revive the economy, bring back growth, restore confidence and bring back investment. Enough time being wasted. People want to see results. And investors are giving him the chance because we see market going up, ringgit slightly strengthening, but more needs to be done.
And just one last quick question to both of you. GE14 resulted in 3 different prime ministers. The million-dollar question, will Anwar Ibrahim serve the full 5 years term? I'm just seeing shrugging of shoulders, smiling faces, and an uncertain way of how to answer that question. Is that fair? We just don't know.
We've had 3 prime ministers since the last election. Muhyiddin Yassin lasted for about 18 months. Ismail Sabri lasted 15 months. So we don't know, hopefully, so that there'll be some stability and he can carry out the reforms that he's been promising and championing over the last 2 decades. But at the same time, at least in the next 1 year, besides handling government affairs, you would also have to be politically sharp because we have 2 by-elections coming up, Padang Serai's federal seat and also a state seat in Tioman. And the state elections, that's when 6 states will be dissolving and 3 of them are Pakatan Harapan-led states. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll have some clues along the way. Thank you both, Mel and Afifah. It's always great to talk to you about the ongoing, ever-changing, moving and shifting sands of the political landscape of Malaysia. Where can our listeners find you to keep up to speed with your reporting in Malaysia?
Follow me on Twitter.
Twitter, yes.
Now, Twitter's the best place. MelgoCNA and AfifahCNA for those of you listening. And as you've heard, Malaysian politics is a complicated affair where sworn enemies can become allies and coalitions can rise and fall. And now, after 3 decades in wait, after prison and pardon, after promise and betrayal, Anwar Ibrahim has finally become Malaysia's Prime Minister. In many ways, for the 75-year-old, this new chapter of his story can finally begin. TV version of CNA Correspondent airs on CNA every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. You can also watch it whenever you like on CNA.asia. Do like and subscribe to this podcast version that takes you behind the scenes with our correspondents for all the big stories from around the region and beyond. Thank you for listening. Our podcast team is made up of Jacqueline Chan, Joanne Chan, Daniel Lee, Crispina Robert, Clara Ong, and me, Steve Lai.